love to sing, and this is something you will, I guess, have gathered from my bio, that I'm in the San Diego Women's Chorus, and I've sung for a lot of my life, and it's an important part of who I am. I also love to dance, and this is something that I forget from time to time. I don't know if this happens to you, but I forget about dancing. This is despite the fact that I was a child who took dance lessons from the time that I was tiny up until eighth grade. I did creative modern dance classes. When I was in college, one of my roommates was the president of the social dance club. Social dance meaning, in this case, waltzing, foxtrot, rumba, tango. Yeah, exactly. And so we would take breaks from studying sometimes and waltz walk down the hallway or just sort of foxtrot around the lounge. When I was in seminary, one of the projects I did as part of a biblical interpretation class at the Christian seminary I attended was to write a contradance inspired by some things we'd learned about a piece of biblical literature. So. And that, by the way, we could do a project or we could do a paper. And writing that contradance turned out to be way more work than writing the paper would ever have been. So I love to dance, and this is something I forget from time to time. And then I'm reminded how important it is for balance, like the reading said, how important it is to have dance in my life. One of these reminders came last summer. When I went to a big choral festival in Denver. As I said, I'm a member of a chorus that is the San Diego Women's Chorus, and we are a lesbian-identified feminist chorus that's open to all women. We're part of this larger movement of gay and lesbian choruses, LGBTQ choruses more broadly, most well known as sort of gay men's choruses, but there are women's choruses and all gender choruses. I think there's one in Long Beach that's a S soprano alto tenor bass choir that is a member of this organization, which is called GALA, Gay and Lesbian Association of Choruses. And every 4 years, there is the Choir Olympics, which is not called that. It's called the GALA Festival of Choruses, and it happens that thousands of choir members from all of these LGBTQ choruses from all over the country descend on somewhere for festivals and workshops and all this stuff. So we descended upon Denver, and there was a beautiful, so many touching moments, one of which was, this was soon after the shooting at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, and there was a beautiful moment when, during the opening ceremony, the Orlando Gay Chorus came and walked in. And they didn't have a role particularly in the opening ceremony, but they just walked in and got a standing ovation for walking in. And we were honoring the tragedy that they'd experienced in their community, but also the work that chorus had done in singing at funerals and helping out in the community and really bringing healing to their community. Another beautiful, one of my favorite moments from the festival was towards the end, there was a concert in the evening that was put on by the youth choirs. And it was the youth choirs and youth members of the choirs. Youth in this case goes up to 24. They were so earnest and beautiful and talented and living into their authentic selves and just so bravely. And it was wonderful. And the last song they did was a mashup of two really dissimilar songs, one of which is Will I from Rent, and the other was Shut Up and Dance. And before they got up and did their piece, the choir director explained that this was done on purpose, with some thought to mash up these disparate songs. So the song from Rent, you will know it, it's the Will I Lose My Dignity? Will Someone Care? Right? It's this cry from HIV-positive characters at the heart of the early AIDS crisis in the early 90s. And then Shut Up and Dance is a pop hit from 2014 Shut up and dance with me. That's the whole message. And the director explained that they wanted to have this contrast of suffering and joy to say three things. One, that the youth understood and were learning about the history of LGBTQ choruses and honoring how that especially was manifest during the early 90s in the early days of the AIDS crisis, and the particularly gay men's choruses who sang at funeral after funeral and lost such a huge percentage of their members. So the youth weren't alive then, but they were honoring and learning that history. And two, to give a vehicle of expression for the LGBTQ youth who have their own serious struggles today with many different things. It looks different than that era, but it is real. And three, that the knowing all this, knowing history, knowing challenges and tragedy, that the youth embrace joy and love and care and fabulousness. And so they, okay, so all that said, and then they got up and they started their song, and some of us were in tears when they started singing, and then we gradually got to our feet as it moved into the more pop part of it, and pretty soon everyone was up on their feet, and those youth were schooling us on how to sing and dance at the same time. And they were just dancing, and it turned into this whole all-theater dance party, and it was this beautiful moment of, I guess, catharsis, of moving through the sort of community fear that had to do with the Orlando shooting and in our lives in general, and then, you know, embracing authenticity and joy and beauty. Hard times require furious dancing. So I came up with the title of this sermon, Dancing for Justice, and then I Googled and realized there's actually an organization that is called that. And it came out of this, the following story, which is that in December of 2014, the professional dance community of Philadelphia took to the streets in a project that was called Dancing for Justice. And it was organized in New York and DC and Detroit and Chicago and Tallahassee. And there are some other places. And our mission was to, quote, use art as a primary tool to communicate and to protest for Black lives. And their event involved both Black and non-Black participants. And it was like a march and it was like a protest, but it was more than that. One of the people who helped organize it, Ellen Chenowich, it described it this way. To say we marched is not accurate. We traveled as much as possible in a sequence of steps, 8 counts with our hands up, 8 counts holding parts of the body as if wounded, 8 counts hunched over with our hands behind our backs, and the final 8 counts bringing our hands to our chests. When they reached the end point of this, there was time for free dancing, for what they talked about, for participants to use their bodies to work through emotions, to shed emotions of fear and negativity and negative energy. And this project worked for justice on several levels, right? It was on the level of a protest or a communication, using art to communicate something to an audience, enacting in a stylized way a person shot by a police officer and a community experience of consistent violence. As another organizer, Gregory King, put it, dance entertains, but dance also mirrors the imbalances in society. And art like this, I'm sure you know, can engage and move someone who might not be moved by just a protest alone or by a newspaper article or an opinion piece. Dance is art and communication and touching the emotions. Dancing for justice in that way. It was also a vehicle for justice for the participants, for expressing the grief and rage and brokenness and moving through that, having an outlet that's a ritual of healing, having an outlet to as they said, to shed the negative emotions. Again, Gregory King. Politics danced as we organized our bodies to encircle freedom. Freedom danced as we worked to change the landscape of hate. Moving within a movement, our choreographed bodies broke through the restrictions of tyranny as we boldly cried for justice. The power of the moving body can serve as a vehicle for social change. Change that uses differences to highlight commonality. We danced for justice. We danced for equality. We danced for our ancestors and our children. Hard times require furious dancing. It can be too easy in a world of so many serious problems to imagine that art is a waste of energy, that it is a luxury, that we are going to have to choose between doing things that nurture ourselves and doing things that change the world. But you know, as it has been said, art changes people, and people change the world. Certainly, it's possible for art to become something abstract and out of touch and sort of overly disconnected. I'm sure you've seen that. And it's also easy to get into this space where we believe that everything is a zero-sum game, that there's scarcity, and that's hard, it starts to be hard to argue. You start to think like, well, we have to choose between funding, say, a youth dance program and funding a program that ensures that those same youth have enough to eat. And I think it's also true on a deeper level that those things are more related than we always realize. And hard times require listening to people who have had some experience of surviving hard times. People like Alice Walker in our reading, people like poets from speaking from an experience of being Black in the United States, people like Audre Lorde, who wrote, "Poetry is not a luxury." So we need to dance, and we need to dance for justice. And in some ways, I do mean this literally. I mean that, as you can hear in some of the stories that I was telling, dance can be used in a protest. It can be used in organizing. It can be used in an experience that teaches the history of a cause. And this, of course, is true more broadly of other types of art. So I mean literally dancing for justice. And then I also mean that dance and art, more broadly, nurtures justice in other ways, maybe more indirect ways than specifically using it at a protest. So to clarify, when I say dancing for justice, I both mean dance and I mean some other things. I mean embodiment, I mean art, I mean community, and I mean joy. So when I say we can dance for justice, I mean embodying all of those things for justice. So start with embodiment. Hard times require loving the body. I mean things like the story in our reading that Alice Walker, where she imagines that dance movements came from the experience of enslaved people and using them not just for dance, but to contort away the stress of working in agriculture in that enslaved place. I also mean eating and drinking and sleeping and dancing. In this world, justice isn't some abstract theory. It's about what, very concretely, what happens to people's bodies, right? Whether or not a person has a right to keep their body alive and well and under their control. And oppression has to do with control of the body and with violence toward the body and with fostering shame about the body. In that context, something that reclaims for a person to reclaim the body can be liberating. Hard times require embodiment. And hard times require art. I'm sure you have your own examples of how art has moved you or the way that art and beauty have got you through a hard time. I know that when my father was ill, my mother would get up in the morning and read poetry. Maybe you have an experience like that, or how a piece of art changed the way you view the world or understood a certain type of issue. Creating justice requires art because it requires imagination, furious imagination. To build a different world, we have to be able to imagine it first, right? Audre Lorde wrote that poetry forms the quality of light within which we predicate our hopes and dreams towards survival and change. First made into language, then into idea, then into more tangible action. Poetry is the way we give name to the nameless so that it can be thought. It lays the foundations for a future of change, a bridge across our fears of what never has been before. So I love that. Made into language, then into idea, then into more tangible action. Having a different, using art, telling a story to tell a different vision of the world, one that is more just. We saw that in the story, the Dancing for Justice group, Dancing for Black Lives, deliberately had Black and non-Black participants participate in the same movements as a vision of empathy and solidarity. Their dance was both a way to lament Black lives lost and an enactment of an imagining of a world where Black people do not live in fear in that particular way. Imagining a different vision. It happens to be today, as I was reminded, that a day when Christians observe Palm Sunday and tell the story about Jesus coming into the city in this processional way. I won't say a lot about it, but one way to think about that story is not as something that actually happened, but as a way that those people who were following Jesus wanted to imagine a different view, a view in which it wasn't the Roman Empire that had processions and parades, but that it was, you know, their folks who had power through processions and parades. Using storytelling, using art, using movement to imagine a different future. And it's particular, I want to particularly note that creating art can be especially important for folk in an oppressed or marginalized group in some way. Creating art is being an agent, being a creator, and that is working against oppression. So hard times require art. And hard times also require community. It's not enough to dance alone. I'm certain that one person dancing alone, oh, hi, baby. Hi. I love babies. Sometimes you just dance with your baby. Okay. So it's possible that one person, you could just dance alone, and that could probably interrupt some injustice happening or enact a vision of justice or be a beautiful piece of art. Someone, you know, could help connect one person with their own embodiment. But I noticed as I was putting this together that all the stories I told were about people dancing together, because creating art together is healing. And I actually mean this literally. I found a reference to a scientific study into the effects of dance on pain management, and it showed that people who danced were able to tolerate pain, not just people who happened to dance, but who were assigned to dance for this study, tolerated pain more, they were able to tolerate more pain more effectively. And that's not all. My favorite part is that the people who did synchronized movements with others experienced less pain than those who didn't. So dancing together in synchronized ways, there's also some good research on singing, helps us feel more connected. It helps, you know, there's certain hormones that help us experience less pain in that. It helps us feel closer, more nurtured, in less pain. So if I leave you with something very concrete from the pulpit, it is that I recommend Zumba or jazzercise or chair dancing in your chair, you know, maybe do, you know, take that up with a friend of yours. Just see how it goes. Hard times require furious dancing. And hard times require joy, of course, right? Joy, the, you know, affirming joy in the middle of suffering. That's a powerful movement for justice. Justice is about envisioning a world that is more joyful and beautiful and free. Or honestly, what is the point? There's a famous quote you may have seen attributed to Emma Goldman. If I can't dance, I don't want to be in your revolution. It's a paraphrase of something longer. It's worth noting, of course, if you don't know, Emma Goldman was a feminist, anarchist, and controversial revolutionary of about 100 years ago. And worth noting, she was a survivor of religiously based oppression in another continent, something that's not irrelevant to today. And she said this, "At the dances, I was one of the most untiring and gayest. One evening, a young boy took me aside with a grave face, as if he were about to announce the death of a dear comrade. He whispered to me that it did not behoove an agitator to dance. Certainly not with such reckless abandon, anyway. It was undignified for one who was on the way to become a force in the anarchist movement. My frivolity would only hurt the cause. I grew furious at the impudent interference of the boy. I told him to mind his own business. I was tired of having the cause constantly thrown into my face. I did not believe that a cause that stood for a beautiful ideal, for anarchism, for release and freedom from conventions and prejudice, should demand the denial of life and joy. I insisted that our cause could not expect me to become a nun, and that the movement should not be turned into a cloister. If it meant that, I did not want it. I want freedom, the right to self-expression, everybody's right to beautiful, radiant things. Everybody's right to beautiful, radiant things." In January, after the administration instituted the travel ban the first time, the don't call it a Muslim ban, I'm sure you're aware protests broke out at airports. There were some here, I think. I was at the San Diego airport. We weren't that organized. It was people who just showed up, and we just kind of chanted the same thing for hours. And no hate, no fear, refugees are welcome here. And we just chanted it. And later that night, actually it was the next morning on Facebook, I realized that we could have learned something from the protest at the San Francisco International Airport. I don't know if any of you saw videos from friends there. I had a UU minister friend and colleague named Renwa Hamami was there, and she posted video. And they weren't just chanting. They had a marching band. Radical marching bands are a thing. I believe there's one in LA. And there's one in New York and San Francisco, and we don't have one in San Diego yet. At their most basic level, it's about making your protest loud and visible, right? It's much more noticeable to have that you're having a protest when you have drums and a tuba. And actually, band nerds, please, I am careful to note that this was a sousaphone, which is what you have in a marching band because you don't have a tuba. So pretty soon, they weren't just chanting. It became, you know, it had a beat, and it became dancing. And it became, you can see a video of two men dancing in the middle of a circle, sort of in this, I'm not sure if there's a particular cultural context or practice that I'm missing, but it looks sort of like a dance-off, like they're both dancing like really, you know, separately, but sort of at one another in this very energetic and fast way. And everyone's clapping and cheering. And what I love about it is it makes it not just a protest of saying no to something, but it's a protest of saying yes to something else. reimagining a world we want to say yes to, where people of different backgrounds and religions and national origins dance together at the airport. Literally a moment of no hate, no fear. Refugees are welcome here. Everybody's right to beautiful and radiant things. Because in hard times, in times when people are oppressed, particularly within that community, joy is a rebellion. It is a way to get out of the fear, to get out of the grief, just maybe for a moment. Those feelings are valid and real. I don't want to suggest that we run away from feeling fear, anxiety, grief, and anger. Those are important and valid and real. And at the same time, we can't live there. I think of that crowd of dancing LGBTQ youth, so beautiful, so defiant, and so authentic, and so joyful. And that's a world I want to be a part of. They reminded us that the working for LGBTQ rights is about the right to be joyful and proud and fabulous. The folks in the Dancing for Justice movement imagining a world of solidarity, a world of equality. Folks at the airport dancing and clapping. So the world needs furious dancing. It needs justice, and that justice needs us to dance. May it be so.